idea that exists in the hearts of everyone, to put the resources into the hands of the people, to increase the quality and benefits of their life. Let's remove the middleman. Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Dark City Compassion Club awaits you. It's your radio.
It is indeed your radio. Welcome. It's the 12th of August 2015. You're listening to Martin. I'm the host tonight of the Dark City Compassion Club. Welcome everyone. We've got a very special guest tonight, a man named Alan Buffery, the author of a book named All About My Hat, all about a cannabis adventure in India in 1972. Alan has been all around the world, over 30 different countries, and he knows a hell of a lot about, the cannabis scene and global travelling and things like that. I've got the panel with me tonight. On the panel will be Bob, Sarah and Sean. Callers are welcome. The number to call in is 0161 298 0298. That's a UK number. Or if you're online, just get Skype up and type in Bob's Backyard in the search, and we'll happily add you into the conversation. Now, we've also got a chat room on the website. Any questions you don't feel like talking, you just want to ask anonymously, feel free to stick them in there. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce tonight's guest. Alan, could you make yourself known for the listeners?
Hi, everybody. Pleased to be here and to speak to you.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm good, yeah.
I'm getting some repeat playback. Oh, sorry for being quiet there. That's my browser messing up with me. Sorry, everyone. Alan, could you just introduce yourself again for everyone? Sorry.
I've just said hi, it's nice to be here to speak to you, and hope we have a good evening.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. Could the rest of the panel maybe introduce themselves and just say hello to everyone? Make it a bit friendly.
Hi, I'm Sarah, and I'm the science advisor for Dark City Compassion Club, and I'm a radio host on Dark City Radio. I've been doing this for about 3 years now, almost since it started. And yeah, I'm looking forward to tonight's show because I've been friends with Alan on Facebook for quite a while now, and I've been a supporter of his work, and I've watched him do loads of really amazing stuff. So I'm really looking forward to this show, and welcome on Dark City.
Hi everyone, I'm Sean.
And I'm Bob, the resident Dark City bastard.
Brilliant. Alan, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you get into cannabis and travelling?
Well, the first time I tried cannabis, I was actually at university, 1970, studying chemistry at UEA. And I started smoking cannabis in my final year, really, which did change my life quite a lot, although I did carry on and I did end up graduating. But after leaving university, not really finding a suitable job at the time, and wandering around a little bit, maybe aimlessly, we decided to, a few of us, get together, buy a small van and head off east. The main idea was to go to Turkey and see what happened when we got there. We left Turkey, two of us, about 2 months later, with £20 in my pocket, and just wandered, really, ended up in India in the summer of 1972, and met loads of really nice people en route, lots of hospitality, fortunately, because we didn't have very much money. Got very stoned in most of the countries we passed through, with the exception being Iraq and Iran, but I did have a smoke in Syria, and obviously Afghanistan, lots of chillums, you know, and lots of hippies, lots of music, and on to India, where I finally ran out of money and ended up getting really ill. And that's the story from those days, and that all awakened my interest in cannabis. From my first smoke, the first time I ever had it was in coffee, and from that first experience, I thought the law was wrong. And although I didn't do anything about campaigning for quite a few years, eventually it did lead me to joining a campaign group, and that led me on to forming a political party and standing for parliament and writing books and speaking at the Oxford Union and radio shows and all that sort of stuff. Until 2006, having been in the Legalised Cannabis Alliance then for 7 years, playing a major part in the administration as well as campaigning, everything changed and we deregistered as a party. I carried on until 2011 when I left, and since then I've been campaigning independently, which is still what I do today. And my main issue is the lack of justice in punishing people that don't hurt anybody, which is the case of even in most cases supplying good quality cannabis to people. It doesn't hurt people, you know, and people should be allowed to grow it, and people should be protected by the law and not punished by the law. That's my main point throughout my campaign. Thanks.
Cheers for that, Alan. It's a really great introduction. You've done loads. I mean, you've given us loads of information there, but I actually spoke to you the other day and you told me that in 1990, you did some time. A 10-year sentence, was it?
That's right. During the 80s, I started dealing, and I was very much into quality control. I always wanted to get good quality because I was very concerned with people being damaged by what was still around, lots of bad quality in those days. And I carried on, and it built up and it built up until 1990, 1991, and finally we were busted for a conspiracy to import cannabis and conspiracy to supply cannabis. And they put it down to 150 kilos over 3 years. And I was found guilty and given two concurrent 10-year sentences, which then I served about 4.5 years.
Right. So, could you tell us a little bit about, do you medicate with cannabis, Alan?
I don't take it specifically for any medical reasons, although I have experienced medicinal benefits. I mean, relaxation, relief from stress, and I also find it very inspiring. I find it very sociable. But my first experience with any specific medicinal use was actually when I went to a meeting in Belgium about 10 years ago. An ANCOD meeting, and we caught the bus from Norwich at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and we arrived in Antwerp at 5 o'clock the next morning, and we had to sort of wait around and sit around and walk the streets and find the venue and upstairs and downstairs and then sitting in a meeting for 3 hours. By noon, I couldn't walk. My legs were just completely, you know, racked with pain. I wouldn't say I can't walk, but it was a struggle. And that was the first time when somebody offered me a pipe and I smoked it, and I got immediate medicinal benefits. And within like 2 minutes of smoking the pipe, I felt back to normal. I could dance around, I could jump around, I could walk. And I thought, there this really is a medicinal plant. Well, you take it for that reason or not. I believe the vast number of people that use cannabis, even if they're just doing it for a good time, that is therapeutic. And I prefer that word, therapy, therapeutic. I prefer that to say medicinal.
Therapy. Cannabis therapy. Sounds good, doesn't it? I like that. I like it a lot. But I also like recreational use of the plant, you know, what I consider to be recreational. I mean, that must be why you went on the journey. Was it not for, you know, excitement and you know, just the variety of life, you know, am I right?
Yeah, well, that's precisely. I mean, I took it because my friends were taking it. They were having a good time. I wanted to have a good time, to be on the same level, if you like. And so we took it for fun, and we took it because it helped appreciation of music. It helped relaxation, and it brought people together. But really, if you go to a doctor sometimes, if somebody suffering from stress, work-related in particular, they go to a doctor, the doctor uses this word recreation. You know, we all need recreation in our lives, whether it's sport or whether it's travel or whether it's reading, whatever it is, we all need recreation, recreation. And I think that cannabis is recreational in the sense it recreates us, and it's also medicinal, and the word therapeutic covers both.
I like the idea of covering both, Alan. I like that. Sounds really cool. So, there's so much I could go through with you. In terms of, Sarah's got something, but before I bring Sarah in, I just want to ask you a quick question about a bang. Is it a milk drink? I don't know if you've heard of it. Have you ever had that on your travels? Cannabis bang, I think they call it.
Yes. I had bang, and it's a good word for it because it is a bang. And that was the first bang I had. It was homemade, which we used to call a coffee bang, which was basically dissolving some nice hash in a little bit of butter, hot butter, and then mixing in milk and adding coffee, or you could put hot chocolate in. And we used to call that a coffee bang. But the original bangs coming from India and Pakistan are made mostly with like leaf, you know, THC active leaf material and herbs and spices mixed in with, I don't really know what, but I drank one in Pakistan, and it certainly gave me an enjoyable afternoon. But the one thing was, it tasted absolutely foul, and it was a case of like getting it down your neck as quick as possible. But bang is also a holy drink in India that they make, and they drink from cannabis rather than the resin, the actual bud.
That's great, Alan. That really answers my question. I think Sarah wants to say something, and then Bob. Sarah, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, hello. I just want to take you back a little bit to just about the recreational use of cannabis, because I mainly work within the medical cannabis field. You know, I represent Dark Seat Compassion Club, and I'm also the Yorkshire representative for the United Patients Alliance, which is also, you know, a medical group. But I do actually get concerned about the fact that so much focus is actually put on the medical side. Like most groups that you go into, they're all focused on the medical side. I actually feel like a lot of the other groups who use cannabis kind of get a bit left out, and it does concern me that when the law does change, that it changes in such a way that it only the medical people are catered for. And if that's the case, certain extracts and things may only be available from dispensaries or from people like GW Pharmaceuticals. So do you think that there's a risk of this happening as well? I really do feel like the recreational side is kind of underrepresented. Do you think that's right? Would you say that's right to say that?
Absolutely, nowadays. I mean, when we formed the Legalized Cannabis Alliance, we were talking about the, you know, freedom of choice for every person to use whatever they want. And we were talking about protecting that use and protecting the people so that whatever they chose to use was as safe as possible. In 2001, when we stood in the elections, you know, we were mainly focused on, no victim, no crime. And 2005, by that time, a lot of the people who stood were mainly focused on the medicinal use, and whether it was for that reason or not, we did lose a lot of support from the people that don't consider themselves to be medicinal users. The problem I see is where you draw the line, because like I say, you know, it relieves my stress, so that must be a medicinal use. Somebody else has a back pain, so that must be a medicinal use if it eases it. And then there's on the other extreme people suffering from terrible illnesses like multiple sclerosis and cancer, epilepsy and all the illnesses where the benefit is maybe much more noticeable. You know, the trouble is when we talk about medical cannabis, I don't know where to draw the line between what's medical and what's not medical, because to me, it's all medical. As long as it's clean and good and it's beneficial, it's all medical. I don't see how human rights law would allow any future legalization to limit it to people, almost, if you like, it's not very nice to say, but almost like the qualifying illnesses. And if you have this illness, you're not going to be busted for growing it. But if you don't have that illness, you might be busted for growing it. Whereas the action of growing it is about the person and what the person is doing. If they're not harming anybody, it doesn't really matter. It shouldn't matter in law whether they're ill or not. The second worry is the term medical cannabis, because if you go to Holland, for instance, if you want medical cannabis, you go to a doctor, if you can find a doctor to give you a prescription, because even in Holland, not all the doctors will give a prescription. Once you get a prescription, you take it to a pharmacy, a chemist shop, and you buy your cannabis, which costs slightly more than it does in the coffee shop. Now, the other form of medical, now that cannabis is called Bedrocan, and it's produced by a pharmaceutical company. It's standardized, so they know exactly how much the ratio of THC and CBD, two of the active ingredients, what they know what that ratio is. There's three or four types that are available, and it's irradiated, so it's, there's no little bugs or anything like that in it. And then it's sold in 5 or 10 gram, tubs through a chemist. Over here in the UK, we've got a similar situation with an extract called Sativex. Now, it's very strange because Sativex is a licensed medicine, although it's not easy to get, and often people, again, they have to buy it themselves, pay for it themselves. It won't be supplied through the national health system. It costs, a lot of money, over £100, and there's about 3 grams of bud in a container. It's been mixed with alcohol, so there'd be problems for anybody, wants to use it if they suffer from any problems with alcohol, whether it's a health problem or whether it's a religious problem. They can't really use it. And GW Pharmaceuticals, who are making it, are actually performing a miracle, because they're taking a plant which the government says has no medicinal value. They're adding alcohol, extracting the whole plant with a little bit of peppermint flavoring, and turning it into a medicine, which is actually, it's what alchemists would be trying to turn lead into gold. You can't turn something with no medicinal value into something with a medicinal value. So the law is actually, the scheduling is totally wrong at the moment. All the profit goes to the pharmaceutical companies. They're producing, they are growing hundreds of thousands of plants and selling an expensive product to people in desperate need, whilst other people in desperate need are growing a few plants and risking even prison. And other people who may be not in such desperate need, again, they're risking prison. So that is why I like to focus on the question of justice and what the person with the cannabis or growing the cannabis or using the cannabis or supplying the cannabis, what that person is doing, to other people, not why they're using it. If they're harming other people, there's laws out there. The laws are already there. It's the same.
Sorry to butt in there, Alan, but I think what you're getting to is that anything that goes on in private should remain in private. And if you're not harming anyone, then you should be well within your rights to continue on what you're doing.
Well, exactly, but in public as well. If you're not harming anybody, why should you? If you're not risking harm to anybody, or property or rights, then what should it have to do with the law? If you're using it and you're suffering yourself from it, then what has it got to do with the law? It should be a doctor, not a policeman.
Well, allegedly there's a victim, Alan. Do you know the UK's number one victim?
Well, probably the pharmaceutical companies.
No, you're close, but no cigar. I'm not going to sit here and play the guessing game with you all night. The number one victim in the UK, everybody, is the Crown. As far as I'm aware, we've had a few people come on and say that when you get busted for a drug offence, it's the Crown that's the victim.
I've never heard the Crown being described as a victim, but, I mean, the Crown Prosecution Service is the people that prosecute us.
Because they're losing out when we win. Because when we're growing, we're winning, right? Because we're medicating ourselves, we're empowering ourselves. Have I gone too far?
Well, I know what you mean. I mean, the tax, you know, the tax man is making a nice little earner out of the pharmaceutical company, isn't it? Until they can somehow make sure that people who grow it pay tax or people who buy it pay tax. It's a tax issue. And in that sense, because the tax is, you know, it's Indian revenue, it's all tied up. It's, in actual fact, you know, the Crown would tell you that you're a subject of the Crown.
Yeah, but the Crown won't say anything because the Crown is a mythical fiction. The Crown, like, there's some Crown, like, sat in Westminster, like, just sat there, like, with a camera on it. Do you know what I mean? The Crown
Do
you see what the Crown is now, fella? Yeah, the Crown's a corporation. And who's got, you know what I mean? And why is that corporation a victim when I'm medicating myself? You know, what kind of, you know, that's the reality I feel as though we're living in the UK right now. Sorry, I'm not watching the chat box. It looks like everything's good. Yeah, oh, sorry. Sorry, Bob wants to jump in. Sorry, Bob, go on.
Yeah, the Crown's not a corporation, and the Crown was an authority.
I can't remember who it was, James, the somebody or other, maybe you have to check your history, who gave authority to the government
to serve the people. And we have a caller coming in the line. I'll jump straight to that, Martin. The caller, would you like to go ahead? Welcome to Dark City Radio. You're live on the Compassion Club.
Hello.
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 Are you live? Hello, welcome.
Oh, welcome. I'm ringing up to say something about Alan's book. I found it rather hilarious and refreshing, because where the areas he is talking about are now, today, destroyed by war. What he is describing in his book is quite amazing, because it's not there anymore. Hello?
Thank you so much for that caller. I was thinking that the other day. He was describing communities of Afghanis, Indians that are just no longer there, mate. They've been obliterated. Yeah, they've been obliterated by friends of this victim.
That's the one point I'd like to make. There's another point. I would like to thank Alan for his campaign work, because he is one of the people who has stuck in there for near enough 30 years. And, well, not 30, but 20 years he's been going on, and he has brought the issue of the legalization of cannabis onto the political agenda like no other person.
That's amazing. Thank you ever so much, caller. Do you wish to remain anonymous, or do you want to say who you are?
My name is Ingo.
Thank you ever so much for calling in.
Thanks for saying that, Ingo.
Thanks for saying that, Ingo. You've really inspired me, Ingo. And what I want to do is buy a copy of Alan's book. I want to give it away on the next show. Well, I'm going to do a little giveaway.
It's funny because it's told from the hat side of you. It's the hat talking, and it creates a situation in a way which brings you further into it, because you can then concentrate on the book and the surrounding, and you're in there. Your brain engages far more with it by talking through a third party than any other book, I think.
Again, thank you, Ingo. Thanks a lot. Yeah, thanks for your call. That's really inspiring, Alan. I've not read your book, Alan, but I've had a look at the site. What is it? AlanBuffery.org? Is it allaboutmyhat.org? What is it? Sorry.
It's buffery.org.uk, and then all one word, allaboutmyhat.html. but it's on Amazon as well.
Yeah,
I would like to say one thing that Ingo mentioned, because on in the book and on the cover of the book is a photograph of me wearing a hat with a line of young Arabic-looking people, and that was actually taken in a little village just across the border from Syria into Iraq. And when I started writing the book, I looked to up the village and see what's happening there now. And I remember walking down the road, you know, and we crossed the border. We had about 3 or 4 miles to walk from the Syrian border post into the Iraqi border post. And then we carried on and we walked down the road with a few little houses and some fields and into a little village. And we saw a little tea house near a school and we stopped and had a cup of tea. And then we met the locals and we ended up staying the night in the little house. And that's where the photograph was taken. That place is still on the map, but it doesn't exist anymore. It's all army barracks and oil workers and, you know, it's completely gone. It's completely devastated. And some of the other places as well, like Afghanistan, Kabul, you know, bombed out, Chicken Street still there. I think the atmosphere will have completely changed. And that was a very fortunate time for me, because there was lots of people crossing from west to east, people that were called hippies, or we used to call ourselves freaks. We never liked the word hippie. But lots of people were traveling across Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, into India. And so the locals were getting used to people. And there were even places in Kabul you could go get, you know, hamburgers if you ate meat, or vegetarian, or pizzas, milkshakes, all the Western, you know, Westerns were catered for, and plus the hash was really easy to get. And it was wonderful. It was a wonderful sort of feeling. And it was filthy dirty. It was completely unhygienic, completely backwards. It was hard to make a phone call. Of course, we didn't have mobile phones. We didn't have iPods. We didn't have internet, you know. We did lots of things that people, we take for granted now, we didn't have then. It was hard. The mail was slow and so on. The people were just standing and staring at us and strange enough, accepting us. And it was like a filthy, dirty heaven, you know. And now I think it's more like a filthy, dirty hell.
I wouldn't know, Alan, because I've never done the hippie trail. But from what I've seen in the media, the whole Middle East is at this time in a complete overhaul from what it was 30 years ago.
Well, exactly. I mean, within 10 years of my trip, all the governments changed. Saddam Hussein came into power. The Shah of Iran was overthrown. The governments of Syria and Afghanistan and were overthrown. The presidents of Pakistan, which is Bhutto, and India was Mrs. Gandhi, they were assassinated. And everything changed. And then the Americans started piling in, and then the Russians started piling in. And now I'd say, if you want to go to India, fly.
Okay, have you been recently?
No, the last time I went was 1985, and I flew to Delhi, and I had 3 months in Kashmir.
Did you see any cannabis in Kashmir?
Well, absolutely. Yeah, some of the best stuff in the world, really. And I've got a couple of funny stories, you know, where I got offered some but never ended up, you know, buying it, because it was, in those days, I think it was £8 for 30 grams in Kashmir, and it was about £100 here. So it was really cheap, but when you're on a holiday, you know, you don't want to carry a lot, and it's very dangerous, actually. If you're caught with more than 5 grams of hash in India, a minimum sentence is 10 years. So you have to be really careful.
Absolutely. You have to be very, very careful. Cannabis is a very, you know, it's a very valuable commodity. And allegedly, if you use it in the UK, you're making the Crown a victim. I'm sorry to keep going on about this Crown victim thing, but it really does bother me, because I feel as though if I'm self-medicating, the Crown is not a victim. How do you feel about that, Alan? Do you know much about this?
However you want to define crown or whatever, no, if you're self-medicating, how can anybody really be a victim? I mean, we could talk about, you know, pharmaceutical companies losing money, tax companies losing money, you know. And like when you say Crown, I know the Crown Court is a corporation. It's registered, it's a business, you know. And they take you into court, they take money off you, and they put that into the court coffers or CPS coffers, or, you know. You know, what they're doing is they're taking money off you. Who's the victim? You're the victim. They're the people who are stealing the medication. They're the people who are stealing the money and stealing people's freedom. Well, I agree with you completely. Whatever we want to say, you know, who society or the Crown, whatever anybody says is a victim, is just total nonsense.
Thank you for agreeing with me there, Alan. And I just want to make a distinction about the Crown that's the victim and the Crown Corporation Court. Bob, would you be able to help me shed some light on this?
Well, it could take a long time, and I don't really want to go down it. I want to kind of talk with Alan. No, it's not Alan. I want to get the name
right. Your microphone sounds like Orville the Duck.
No, that's just how it talks.
Have I solved it?
Yeah, you've solved it. Thank you.
Right, okay. I did check it before, and everybody said it was all right. Well, never mind. You mentioned quite a lot of stuff. I can mention about the Crown Corporation and stuff quickly. The Crown was the King years back handed over to the government to serve us. No longer exists. So this is like, you know, putting dinosaur as the victim. It doesn't really exist any law. People are being duped. It's not unlawful to grow cannabis, to possess cannabis, or to even have it. Unfortunately, we have bullies running around bullying people who are very scared and who actually believe the law stops people doing stuff. I'd just like to remind all the medical users out there who don't consume cannabis, people aren't going to grow for you anymore. You're going to have to do it yourselves. Everyone's going to have to start doing it themselves. It's as simple as that. So, yeah, the Crown, don't contract with them. It's a fictitious thing they're trying to basically trick you into doing. As Alan has said, and Martin, there is no victim, no real victim. There's nobody being harmed. There is no loss. The only deception is the Misuse of Drugs Act. That is a deception in itself. And no rightful police officer or court official or judge should ever prosecute anybody under an act. They're acting. Nothing has really happened. It is literally as it says. We are going to pretend, dress up in fancy costumes, and then we can tell you stuff that you don't know, and we know more than you. And people believe them. That's just as it is. But let me get to the alternative cultures that you have visited, the cannabis cultures around the world, if I may. Go on, give me your name. I don't want to call you. I'll call you Al, so I'm not going to say it wrong. Give us your name, how it's pronounced, man, because it's Welsh, isn't it?
Al is fine. Alan is fine. It's spelt with a U, A-L-U-N, which is the Welsh way, which most people read as Alan. In actual fact, it's Aileen, but nobody's ever called me Aileen.
Aileen. I know, I like Aileen. I like
the U. The U has got an E sound, you know.
Yeah, well, I always get names wrong, bro. So if I can get one right, and that Aileen, it just had that, I don't know, mythical kind of magical ring to it as well. And those cultures, let me get to this, man. Those cultures you went visiting, alternative, different cultures based around cannabis, and they've all been wiped out, pretty much. Every single time someone sets up an alternative culture to cannabis, then we end up with it being destroyed and attacked. In fact, it's not just cannabis. It's any culture that's opposing the one built on war and tyranny and lies on the back of slavery.
Exactly. So, there's a lot of money in war and tyranny and lies.
Well, yeah, I do believe war, well, weapons is the largest business, most profitable business on earth, next to illegal drugs. Of course, illegal. Yeah. They don't actually make rhubarb illegal. And I've I've kind of pushed to have legislation on rhubarb. Because it would be sensible. Rhubarb potentially can kill, you know. I mean, if you don't
well,
get
well, the leaves are poisonous, yeah.
Well, no, no, just the green stem in it, man. It's ignorance, that, really. People kind of think they stole it. But, you know, it's just because, oh, no, you can don't touch the leaf, you'll die. It's actually one of the ingredients of the dish Indian saag, the green leaf of rhubarb. Amazing. I was in India, Alan. I've seen it. Kerala, the communist state in India, most people never even mention it. Nobody ever mentions it in the media at all, normally. But it's communism, and it's doing really well. They ever mention it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the alternative culture, bro, I get that it's under threat today, the UK culture, the same as any other cannabis culture has been throughout time. What do you reckon, bro? What do you reckon we can do to kind of, I don't know, trigger, enlighten our brothers and sisters who still think cannabis is a dangerous plant?
Well, I mean, for one thing, I mean, I remember being down the local park when we had a picnic years ago and saying to the journalist that I didn't think that cannabis was a drug. You know, my opinion is cannabis is a plant. And to classify it as a drug, it's wrong. If you look in the Misuse of Drugs Act, it's an endless list of chemical names. And then all of a sudden, cannabis, you know, is a plant, you know. And in actual fact, you know, And he disagreed with me, and I said, okay, so, you know, we're now sitting in a park full of drugs because we're surrounded by plants, and almost every plant contains some sort of drug, some sort of medicine. It's just that this particular plant is something that, it's something strange about it. It's got so many medicinal uses. It's worshipped in some cultures. It's used for fun by young people. And if it wasn't for the young people using it for fun in the 60s and 70s and 80s, the medicinal uses maybe wouldn't have resurfaced because they were kind of hidden away.
Alan, okay. if the growers in the United Kingdom all stopped supplying today, within 5 days, there'd be riots in every single city within the United Kingdom. Cannabis has always been used medically. It's been helping people get through some of the most terrible, suppressing times. It worries me. It does worry me. It does, because this is blatantly obvious now. Blatantly obvious. So, yeah, bro, I can see quite clearly that even we spoke to people from LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and they're scared, Alan. They're scared.
Well, I know they're scared, yeah. I mean,
they think our country
agree.
Wants to hurt them.
Everybody should grow their own. Everybody should grow their own, but not everybody can grow their own. So we have to think about some way of supply.
Oh, no, bro, I think everybody can. I mean, if you've got no arms and no legs, I can build you a system you can grow. We built them for disabled people. Aquaponic systems have been built purposely to help disabled people be part of the community. In fact, not just be part of a community, but be a very valuable part of a community. In fact, probably more productive than anyone else in the community because they're using them systems. So we can all do it. We can. Okay, sometimes, Alan, some people are going to need help for them to do it. You know, I grant that. And I'm always there to help them people, you know, but they must do it. This is a big, you know, it's about us planting our seed, you know. I don't want to wait for the next generation to fight this ridiculous set of rules that are being put on us, you know, because they are. It's about trade. You know, I live in Spain at the moment. This is where I kind of flit about a bit. But I'm in Spain. And here, what I do is what I do. In private, you know, as long as I don't hurt anybody, Alan, you know, or I don't upset anybody, no harm, no loss, no kind of deception, no breach of the peace type of stuff, in private, carry on, you know, and that would be a great step. I'm not saying we should need laws to protect us from bullies and gangsters, whether they're posing whatever flag they've got in front of them, whatever banner of Masonic influence they're hiding behind. You know, It shouldn't matter. We shouldn't need those. And the fact that we've got people asking for legislation, we've got people kind of going cap in hand to the government and saying, please help us. The government has never helped these people. And I hope people listening to this get that from your story, Alan. You know, you're there and you've been doing this a long time. And let me ask you one other question, because people want to hear you, not me, man. One other question. How many times have you heard in your extended career in cannabis that it'll be legal soon, it'll be decriminalised soon it'll be... How many times have you heard that? And when was the first time you heard that?
Year after year, and probably the first time I heard it was in the early 70s, you know. And what everything you say is true. What we, you know, it's obvious. I mean, I run a little Facebook group page called I Don't Believe My Government. And I don't. Because if they're going to lie and cheat us over the plant, they're going to lie and cheat us over everything else. And we see that more and more and more. And what's going to come out of that? I don't know. If everybody stopped growing, would there be like riots in the street? I don't know. But I say the first step that any just proper government should do is stop interfering with what people do in their private lives and their private houses when they're not hurting anybody, which is what basically the Spanish government has said, that if you're growing a few plants and, you know, there's no threat, then you're not committing an offence. But there's still a problem in Spanish law when it comes to supplying other people. And I do think that supplying other people is ultimately going to be important. And we do need to protect the
country. Well, you don't mind. You just can't make any money, Alan. Yeah, you can't make any money out of cannabis. If you make any money out of it, then, hey, you know, like, they're on their cut. So, in private, as long as you're not making money out of the cannabis. Now, you know, if you made a cake, you can charge for making the cake and the flour and all that.
Yeah.
And you can charge for the material costs. You know, I kind of don't work that way most of the time. We do have a small supply. You know, we produce ourselves. It's a tiny amount now. And most of the time people come and they source their own material. And we help them and show them what to do, you know, because to make cannabis oils for the first time with a few thousand pounds worth of, or euros worth of cannabis can be a bit daunting. It can. So... to have people who've done it a few times that can guide you on the way, it's invaluable to them. Help them to help themselves.
Absolutely. So,
but you are right. It's supplying people you don't really know, you know, like you would, it's a no-no, pretty much. You can't, there's street dealing or, you know, what we'd know as a dealer, is that would be illegal here still in Spain. Again, I don't see what the problem is. They say it's gangsters. Organised crime, but hey, have a look at the English government before you kind of blame people about organised crime.
Kev's just joined us. Sorry to interrupt, guys. Oh no, he hasn't. He's just gone again. I'm sorry, guys. Carry on.
When I was convicted back in the early 90s, you know, it was considered organised crime, and we were called gangsters. I mean, we weren't gangsters. It was organised and it was a crime, but not as you think organised crime, like setting up a bank robbery or something like that. It was just like people, you know, in those days mostly importing it and passing it down the line, and eventually it went out and the customer hopefully was happy with the final product and paid a reasonable price, and people made a little bit in between, and there was no problems, you know. It wasn't on the street. There was nothing being on the street. It was all in houses. And now you go to Holland and you have coffee shops. And it's not really a problem, but you can't guarantee quality. You know, you can just say, well, I'm not going back to that coffee shop again. You can take it back and say, I don't like it. But some of the hash in Holland is disgusting. You know, it's not proper stuff. And I've also visited cannabis clubs in Spain, and I liked it, to be able to go in somewhere and chat to people and have a smoke, and there it was good quality. And again, I couldn't see any harm with it. And I don't see the need for people shouldn't have to go out on the street. Not that they have to, but I mean, people shouldn't have to buy from people on the street. The people that go on the street selling, you know, not necessarily the people you want to buy from.
If you buy on the street round here, Alan, you'll end up with a bag of privet.
Yeah,
you'll be pleased to know, Alan, that there's 5 more associations opening up in the Valentian region of Benidorm, around Benidorm, by the end of August. So there's 5 more gone through. I know of another 3 which are on the tables are going in. But they've changed the law already with the association on how they do it. You now have to rent a place, have it all tested and everything done on it. You know, fire tests, health and safety tests, air conditioning units, blah, 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 all sorts of stuff. You have to get all that done first, and then they'll issue before you can open. If you've already got an association, if you're applying for a new association, then you have to rent that before, and that can be 6-9 months of a place rented, and quite an expense to get all that done before you can actually open the doors. Again, this is a good thing in one sense that the authorities are now saying they recognise it and this is what they require. They're worried about public safety. Again, I can see why in a lot of cases. But again, for a lot of medical users and smaller associations that are setting up, not as in street or big turnover, you know, and this makes it out of their price range. It puts it into the hands of larger conglomerates and big business, and probably the ones that they were trying to keep out. So it's kind of a double-edged sword at the moment. Good thing is that it looks like even here in Valencia now, region, which covers quite an area, they're here to stay. And I, just as we mentioned this, to our cannabis association in Alicante, they were the first in the region to be set up, and they are an activist group. And thanks to groups, not just them, but, well, obviously they were the first, so, you know, a big thanks to them, but thanks to groups like that, myself and the Dark City Compassion Club and thousands of other people, if not hundreds of thousands of other people now, within the Valencian region have took their lead, and it's definitely here to stay. So, yeah, it's a good thing, real good thing.
Yeah, I agree entirely. I mean, like you say, one of the things, you know, as it becomes more legal, the authorities are going to step in and try to regulate it as much as possible and control it as much as possible. But it's essential because ultimately it's a consumer that has to be protected. And, you know, I've heard like, okay, cannabis social clubs in Spain, and then basically dealers come along and set up somewhere and they call themselves a cannabis social club, and they send people out on the streets to get members to come in and sign up, and then they buy their stuff. And, you know, it's if it's not like controlled, you know, not everybody obviously, but if there's no like control from the outside, it can go a little bit crazy, because there can be a lot of money made out of it. Maybe not so much medicinally through a cannabis social club, but for people that, you know, don't join the clubs, who don't want to join the club, people who are on holiday, students away from home, you know, that just haven't got the time or the space. You know, if you're a university student living in a house with other university students and you haven't got the space to grow, and you've got to grow in a term, you know, and you want to smoke it, what do? You go on the street. Or what? You know, in Holland, you go to a coffee shop. In Spain, you go to the club. In England, you find somebody who's selling it somewhere and you hope for the best. And I don't think that's good enough.
I totally agree. It isn't good enough. Far from it. You know, I kind of like to let you know your conviction, your criminal record here is excellent to see on your curriculum vitae. You know, if you were applying for a job with us, you'd be right on. What did you get? Oh, right.
right. Okay, that's all right. Well done. Well done. A local hero.
I might be coming down there then.
Hey, man, we'll always pull out a zip bed, man. We can always make room for people like yourself here. Right. Definitely, man. We've got Kevin who's joined us. I don't know if he's got anything to add. Martin, we've got about 5 minutes. And if you haven't read Alan's book, I'm not a big reader. I've read a couple of excerpts out of it. Excellent. You know what I've looked at? It's not available on Torrent, so you'll have to go and buy it. It's not expensive. It is on Amazon. Found it there. I posted it to a few of the groups. And for those of you who are readers out there into this, have a look at it. Within those bits I've seen, and you'll have to excuse me, Alan, I'm not a reader. I'm not one of them people. I do on the internet and stuff, but books I find difficult. But from what I've heard of Alan and what I've seen and the excerpts I've seen and read from his book, he is describing something which is ongoing again and again and again. Look at these cultures. Look how they keep flaring up and being stamped down in the most traumatic ways. This is occurring probably as I speak in Morocco, in Africa, where men are defending their rights against the government who have lied and cheated them over the land. And they've been now named as terrorists. This is going on as we speak. Anyway, I'll hand it over to yourself, Martin, to round it up.
Thank you ever so much, Bob. Thank you ever so much, Alan. I want to say a big thank you for Ingo for calling in earlier. What a hero. We're going to have a giveaway. Alan's inspired me. I want to try and get a copy of his book as soon as possible. I'm going to give away a number of seeds next week. So tune in if you want some free medical cannabis seeds. All the information of the giveaway will be given away at the start of next week's show. So we've got 5 minutes left. Alan, is there anything like pressing, any kind of message from your journey that you feel would be inspiring for the listeners?
Just first to say, if you send me your address, I'll send you a book. So you'll be able to give one away. You just have to keep on, you know. It's like the Berlin Wall, you know. It took a lot of effort. Apartheid in South Africa, it took a lot of effort. Gaining women's rights, it took a lot of effort. We're not just up against in many of those things, it was a political enemy or a religious concept. But we're up against like massive companies who want to step in and make massive profits. And I do agree that people should, if at all possible, grow their own and live their lives quietly. And I do think that the main thing that we should push the government for immediately, even before considering it changing the actual law, is to change the policy and just have a policy that if there's no identifiable victim, then there should be no crime and no prosecution and people should be left alone. I think that's the first thing we should push for, justice.
Brilliant. I agree with you there 100%, but don't look for justice in a court of law. You find justice against men like yourself, not in a court, unfortunately. I totally agree, man.
No victim.
No victim.
You won't find justice in the courtroom. You'll find law in the courtroom. It's all about books. It's all about scoring points, keeping the judge happy. And it's not about you at all. You are the person. You are the victim. You have been taken there. You've been searched. Your life has been interfered with, turned upside down. Your family's been disrupted. You might get a criminal conviction. You might lose your job. Or you can't get a job, you can't get household insurance. If you've got a criminal conviction, you can't go to America. You know, it's the person, in the case of cannabis, nearly every case, it's the person who's being convicted that's the victim. As you say, the other side are the bullies.
Yeah, let's just end on a sound note. Forget these bullies. Forget these people. What we've got, just about everything, is a great cannabis community. There's a lot of love and there's a lot of history. And you've documented a great section of it, you know, and that's going to be your legacy, Alan. Well done. Thank you. You know, I'd have loved to have been in the 70s back then. And people will be in the 70s back then when they read your book and they get into that, you know, and they're the kind of experiences that we all want to promote, and that's why we're here. You know, that's why we do this, because we want to remember, you know, all the great things about life. We want to remember the great ways that human beings can be, those great cultures that can work, and that 9 times out of 10 are related to cannabis. You know, it's an integral part of our existence. It's an integral part of our bodies. And our bodies are not just connected to our bones and fingers. They're connected to everything, you know. So thank you, everyone.
Our music, our artwork, our music, our literature, much of it was inspired by cannabis. And I just say I did write another book. It was called Out of Joint, 20 Years of Campaigning for Cannabis. That's on Amazon. And that's a record of a campaign up until about 2011, from 1991 to 2000.
Alan, we're going to have to finish up here. Good night, everyone. Bye. Tune in next.
An idea that exists in the hearts of everyone. To put the resources into the hands of the people. To increase the quality and benefits of their life. Let's remove the middleman. Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Dark City Compassion Club awaits you. It's your radio.